Hey, Leading Learning listener, if you represent a membership organization looking for ways to expand your online course catalog rapidly with high-quality content, we have good news.
At leadinglearning.com/AMA, you can find out how to make online training from the American Management Association available to your learners.
Through a partnership between AMA and Tagoras, the parent company of Leading Learning, you can give your learners access to more than 70 e-learning modules covering essential business topics ranging from leading and innovating to managing projects effectively to working in hybrid teams.
For details on how to grow your catalog with courses from a true global leader in management training, visit leadinglearning.com/AMA.
Hey there, Jeff and Salisa here. Before we kick off this episode of the Leading Learning Podcast, we want to make a small request of you, dear listener. If you're someone who has listened to the show before and gotten value out of it, or if you're someone listening for the first time and you find this episode valuable, please take just a moment to leave a rating and brief review for Leading Learning on iTunes by going to leadinglearning.com/iTunes.
Reviews play an important role in the long-term success and sustainability of any podcast. Your reviews help attract new listeners, and they help show potential sponsors that the show is reaching listeners and having an impact. We know you're busy, as we all are, so please know that we really appreciate every review we receive. We'd be truly grateful if you would take just a moment to contribute a review today. Now, on with the show.
If you're a leader or an aspiring leader in the business of lifelong learning, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
And I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
Hello there. Welcome to episode 186 of the Leading Learning Podcast, where we talk with Ian Chu, Managing Director at Owl Ventures, a venture capital fund that invests in education technology companies. Ian brings a perspective to the show that we haven't had before, so we're excited to have him here. But before we get to the interview, we want to take just a moment to highlight a recent review of the show and express our appreciation.
That's right. We noted before rolling the usual intro for this episode that reviews really are critical to the show's long-term success, and we thought it might be helpful to provide an example. So this review comes from Gail C. Gail gives Leading Learning a 5-star rating and writes, "Another great episode. Just listened to number 176, 5 Big Takeaways from Traffic and Conversion 2019. Packed with actionable insights. I always appreciate the great show notes as well, so that I can listen on the go and follow up with the notes to record my key takeaways." Thanks so much to Gail for leaving that review and also pointing out the value of the show notes as part of it.
Yes, thank you, Gail. And I'll note that the review is very brief, just a headline and 2 sentences. So if you're worried that leaving a review will be time-consuming, rest assured that it can be done very quickly. Just go to leadinglearning.com/iTunes, give us a rating, hopefully 5 stars, and jot down a couple of sentences. That's it. Now, to turn back to the main focus of this episode, Jeff, you were the one who got to talk with Ian Chu. What did the two of you cover?
Well, the backdrop for our conversation is the fact that there has been just a real surge in the level of investment flowing into educational technology companies over the past several years. And 2018 was a record year, and there don't seem to be any signs of investment letting up. So it definitely seems like a good time to get the perspective from someone who is on the front lines of investing in ed tech, and Ian is definitely right there in the thick of it. I had the pleasure of connecting with him probably about a year ago as he was researching the lifelong learning market, and of course, that is our bailiwick, so he came across us in his research and reached out. And in talking with him a number of times, I've just been impressed with the acumen and thoughtfulness he brings to investing in the sector. So I tried to ask questions that would bring that out in this discussion. And we talk about everything from the basics of venture capital to successful business models in the current learning landscape, to the trends that ENC is shaping the future of EdTech and lifelong learning. All in all, I think listeners will find plenty here that will help them understand an investment niche that's really critical to the market for lifelong learning.
Well, as I said at the outset, you know, he's bringing a perspective we haven't had on the show before, and everything you highlight does sound like it will be of interest to our listeners. So let's go ahead and roll the interview with Ian Chu.
Welcome to the Leading Learning Podcast. I'm Jeff Cobb, and today I'm joined by Ian Chu. Ian is a managing director at Owl Ventures, one of the firms that is leading a wave of investment in educational technology companies. Ian has a wealth of experience in educational investing and board service, and I've personally enjoyed both getting to know him a bit and hearing his perspectives on the lifelong learning market in conversations we've had over the past several months. We thought Leading Learning listeners would also appreciate hearing Ian's perspectives and the perspectives of the venture capital community more generally. So I'm happy to have him as a guest for this episode. Ian, welcome to the Leading Learning Podcast.
Thank you, Jeff. Pleasure.
Well, to start us off, I want to give you a chance to say a little bit more about yourself and your background and work, maybe about Owl Ventures. What would you like to highlight for listeners?
Yeah, thank you very much. I've been investing in technology now for 15 years. I started out as a firm called Silver Lake Partners, making large-scale tech investments. And then the last 10 years prior to Owl Ventures was at Warburg Pincus as well, making growth investments within education technology. So I've been investing in EdTech for the past 10 years. And Owl Ventures, we are an EdTech-focused fund, and we're investing behind transformative companies in education. We have now 28 portfolio companies, and we're managing over $600 million across three funds. For your listeners, Bench Prep, Degreed, Thinkful, Noodle Partners, those are a few of our investments that touch on career skills, lifelong learning, university education. So those are some of the relevant ones. And we also invest in a number of companies within the K-12 market as well.
Well, now, and I sort of cut my teeth, coming into the whole world of online learning and adult lifelong learning. In the venture capital world, I was there in the go-go dot-com days in the mid-90s, mm-hmm. and lots of money being invested. But I'm going to go out on a limb and assume that most leading learning listeners may not have that degree of experience with venture capital. In fact, they may only have a vague idea about how venture capital actually works. Could you give us just a brief primer, a kind of VC 101?
Sure. Yeah. Venture capital as an industry, what we are doing is essentially investing behind companies that we believe are going to transform a particular sector. So in this case, for Owl, it's education as a sector that we focus on. Other firms are going to be investing on in focusing in areas like fintech or financials, real estate tech or logistics and transportation. I think just this week there's going to be Uber coming out to go public as an example. And so, for us as an industry and as a firm, what we are doing is we're investing on behalf of our own investors, which includes the likes of pensions and university endowments. And we're looking for these companies to invest in that, we can support them, not only by providing them with our capital, but also our sector focus, our experience working with and helping to scale companies, our relationships, within a sector, and really just provide them with not only the capital as they continue to grow, but everything around building a business. And so for us, we'll invest here at Owl anywhere between, call it $5 to $35 million. And we'll also hold reserves, essentially what we call follow-on investments, to support the company as it grows. There's certainly going to be some venture firms that invest at an earlier stage even than we do, small amounts. There are segments of the investment world where, called angel investors, right? So this could be friends or families of an entrepreneur, where they're investing a couple hundred thousand dollars even, just to get going. our investment period, and generally, I would say for venture capital, is going to be measured in years. And so these are long-term investments, long-term relationships that we're establishing. And then eventually, you know, as the companies grow and as, you know, hopefully they achieve essentially success, these companies will either be bought or taken public or some other form of, you know, exit or liquidity for the venture firms. And then we in turn then return that money, you know, to our investors, you know, once that happens.
If you're ready to invest in educational technology to help drive the growth and success of your learning business, we suggest you check out our sponsor for this quarter. Community Brands provides a suite of cloud-based software for organizations to engage and grow relationships with the individuals they serve, including association management software, learning management software, job board software, and event management software. Community Brands' award-winning Crowd Wisdom learning platform is among the world's best LMSs for corporate extended enterprise and is a leading LMS for association-driven professional education programs. Award-winning Freestone, Community Brands' live event learning platform, is a leading platform for live learning event capture, webinars, webcasts, and on-demand streaming. Find out more at leadinglearning.com/communitybrands. And now back to Jeff and Ian as they discuss the surge in EdTech investments over the past several years.
I want to come back in a minute to when this is most appropriate, when venture capital, you know, makes the most sense as opposed to other ways of funding a company. But before we get there, you know, one of the key reasons you're here for this episode is that, I mean, we've obviously been seeing a significant rise in ed tech investment over the past several years. And at least the numbers I've looked at, you know, something like, you know, $500 million or so in 2011 to more than $1.5 billion or nearly $1.5 billion in 2018 is probably past that at this point. I mean, it feels a little bit like those dot-com, you know, days that I was talking about when so much money was being thrown at EdTech. What's driving the investment this time, and how's it different?
Yeah, no, wonderful question. A couple of things, and actually, you know, some of the figures that you quoted, you know, I suspect are also U.S. only. I mean, I think if you zoom out, you know, as well, 2018 saw north of $8 billion, you know, when you take into account some of the global markets as well. And so, you know, there is, you know, a lot of interest right now in education. And I'd say there's a couple of things. And I don't think this is a passing fancy at all. You know, if you look at the global expenditure for education as a whole, it's measured in the trillions of dollars. So, you know, call it $6 trillion today. If you look back at, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, it's probably half of that. And in 2030 is forecasted to be $10 trillion. And so this is a market that is growing from $3 to $10 trillion globally in spend. And then the other factor underneath that is the digital adoption is growing. And so as a sector, you know, education has generally lagged other industries, and there's a variety of reasons for that. You know, a couple just to kind of share with your listeners. Certainly, I think infrastructure, you know, if you take K-12 as one example, or even higher education, for many K-12 organizations and schools, public schools, for many years didn't actually have broadband internet access in the school buildings. And then for career learners, I think if you look at the adoption of mobile, certainly the comfort with learning digitally and on the go, you know, has only been on the rise. I mean, even if you look at our own sort of personal behaviors, you know, I personally am certainly listening to more and more podcasts, consuming more video content, you know, today than I was 10 years ago, certainly. And as you think about those trends, more spending, more digital penetration, you know, that's what's fueling a lot of the interest right now in the sector and within education technology specifically. And I think generally what you find in technology is that oftentimes it takes a little bit longer than folks imagine, you know, for things to get going. But then when it finally does get going, the adoption actually is much faster, right? So, I mean, I think the classic example of this is if you think about, you know, the adoption of smartphones. and iPads and things of that nature. If you go back, 20 plus years, if you remember the Apple Newton product, or even the Palm Pilot in the first generation, and you know those products were slow to kind of get going, and eventually, I think perhaps even a little bit early for their time. And then now in the last, obviously, 10 to 12 years, now everybody has, smartphones, and is walking around, I think north of 80% even of, teenagers now are using smartphones, every single day, obviously. And so those types of behavioral changes, as well as, technology changes is what's fueling a lot of the interest in investing and a lot of the company growth in the sector as well.
And you just mentioned the Palm Pilot, which was taking me back nostalgically, because I was a proud Palm Pilot owner, and obviously that particular technology fizzled away. But as you said, others came along that served that need that was represented by the Palm Pilot. And so, plenty of continued growth and investment in that area. And as you're saying, it just makes a lot of sense to be investing in ed tech at this point. Does that mean that... that we're going to be seeing a wave of ed tech IPOs sometime in the next few years?
What we've actually have seen already a number of ed tech companies go public in the last couple of years. And so, names that may be familiar to some of your listeners, companies like Pluralsight, Chegg is a public company. Instructure mm-hmm. Is another one as well. And so I think in the last few years, certainly there have been a number of companies already within education that have gone public. And so, that's something that as a sector matures, I think we'll continue to see happen. There's also a number of companies internationally, frankly, that have gone public within education as well. So if you think about China, some of the companies that have gone there have been more K-12 focused. Mm-hmm. Like companies like TAL or New Oriental, as an example. So I think that will continue. And I think as companies continue to grow and scale in the sector as a whole, continues to grow and scale, you'll see more and more companies that are appropriate for the public markets.
Right, right. And I know for, a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of investors, that IPO, that initial public offering is sort of, that's a big goal to get there and to go public on a stock market and, have your shares traded. But that's obviously not what every company is headed for. And for that matter, not every company is appropriate for venture capital. So could you talk a little bit about where venture capital tends to be most appropriate as opposed to, bootstrapping or taking out a loan or, those sorts of methods for getting the capital that a company needs? Where is VC more appropriate? And to the extent that you can comment on it, in the adult lifelong learning market, where do you see it as being particularly helpful?
Yeah, no, wonderful question. I think VC is appropriate for certain companies, like as you mentioned, and for others, I think bootstrapping is a wonderful way to go as well, right? So it really depends on the entrepreneur. Really depends on what are their goals. How do they see their business as they're starting to write up their business plan, or as they're starting to build their business? What are their objectives, and how do they think that that's going to be best served? If a particular entrepreneur, as an example, is looking, really for this to become a lifestyle business. If this is a consulting business, or if this is a small technology services company where they're happy with, essentially retaining 100% control or control with their partners. If they're happy with investing their profits, that emerge every given year into the growth of the company and slowly scaling the company and over a, period of time, building a nice business that frankly supports, supports their family. That's a wonderful way to go. And certainly there are large companies as well that could emerge from that. But, more often than not, I would say bootstrapped companies either take a longer period of time, certainly, because you have less capital to invest every given year, or they just, essentially stay as lifestyle businesses until the entrepreneur retires effectively. And so I would say for venture money and for venture-backed companies, the goal maybe is slightly different, right? The goal is that there is a large market opportunity The goal is that, you as an entrepreneur want to go pursue that. And I'd say the competitive dynamics also play a factor, right? Because if in a given sector, other companies start to aggressively take market share, that you may not have the luxury of just simply bootstrapping and growing kind of step by step. And so I'd say the market dynamics are important. The entrepreneur and their goals are certainly important. But in areas where the entrepreneur is looking to grow and scale, where the market is competitive and growing quickly and large, I think having sort of VC investors behind you can support not only through the capital that's invested, but also through, again, the network, the relationships, the introductions, the experience, seeing around the corner, those types of things, you know, as investors that we can provide. And then, of course, you know, as investors, we are taking a ownership stake in the company and we are involved. And so, you know, as an entrepreneur, again, it depends on, you know, do you want that, right? Do you want somebody else, you know, working with you together, sharing their thoughts and having a stake of the company? Or would you rather, you know, do it on your own and with your partners?
Yeah, I definitely know some entrepreneurs do not do well with having other people involved in their company. So that is something you definitely have to put some thought into. And you you mentioned the C word there as you were talking, which in this case means competition. I know for a lot of our listeners, that's an important word these days, because whether it's venture funded companies or whether it's bootstrap startups who are just ambitious, there is a lot more competition now in this world of continuing education, professional development. You know, a lot of clients we work with, they used to be the only game in town. You know, that their members would show up and get their education, and that was kind of it. And that's not the case anymore. It's been a really disruptive age. So you know, with that in mind, I'd love to hear what you see as potentially promising areas for collaboration between some of those traditional players, like, you know, colleges and universities, trade and professional associations. How can they collaborate with this new wave of ed tech companies in a way that's as productive as possible for everybody involved?
Yeah, no, it's a wonderful question. I think the, you know, colleges and university associations clearly, you know, have been obviously around for hundreds of years. And, you know, I would say, you know, are at the center oftentimes of, you know, as learners kind of go through their career journey and think about how they want to navigate their own careers, where you get your degree, where you get your graduate school degree, where you get your certification, how do you get involved and learn more about a particular field that you're working in? Where do you develop those relationships? This is where colleges and universities and associations really excel, right? You know, you have annual conferences. Everybody knows that this is really the node where, you know, individuals go every year to connect and be seen and be heard. And so I think that plays an extremely valuable place in this ecosystem, especially as, you know, oftentimes I would say the world is becoming in some ways more a bit more fragmented as well. You know, people kind of go into, you know, their own sort of siloed areas and then, you know, pick their heads up and try to figure out, well, how can I continue to make an impression on the market that I'm in? You know, where I see EdTech kind of stepping in is helping the digitization and processes. So by that, I mean, if you can digitize some of the learning and increase access and reduce costs while improving outcomes, you know, that's something that I think serves everybody, all stakeholders, well. Mm-hmm. You know, we invested in a company called BenchPrep not too long ago. And, you know, what they're doing is essentially providing a digital learning platform that partners with different associations and learning organizations to provide a digital learning platform. And these are the types of things where I see the associations that are providing that content, that are providing the learner relationships, they can leverage the digital learning side. They can really reach more learners. They can achieve a higher pass rate. You know, for HRCI, which is an organization that BenchPrep, you know, works with, I think their users achieved like a 55% higher pass rate than the national average. And then also, you know, from a business standpoint as well, it's helpful. And so they work with, you know, CompTIA as an example, which saw a 20% increase in the revenue of one of their certifications in the first year. And so I think there's a place for ed tech to collaborate around that content digitization. Another interesting area that I find continues to provide value for universities and associations is around benchmarking and data. Because once you have things that are digital, and once you have learners or other stakeholders involved, you know, in a digital fashion, you really have what I call exhaust data that gets produced. So, you know, what are people engaging with? How are people using? And, you know, what are they learning, you know, when they engage with your learning content? If you have, you know, for example, folks that are taking certification exams, where are they coming from? So simple things like, do you have more penetration or awareness of your certification in the Northeast versus the Southwest? You know, a lot of this information can be hard to get at. And now that you have digital solutions, there's a lot more benchmarking and data and insights that you can glean from that. And then translate that into how you make your decisions and where you as an organization are starting to invest in, you know, your growth, for example. So Noodle Partners is another company that we've invested in the past, you know, that provides a digital platform to take degree programs online. And so that, for example, they just signed an arrangement agreement with the University of Michigan Ross School of Business so that you can take essentially a 100% MBA program online. And so again, these organizations, the universities, associations, you know, they have approved, obviously, and created certifications and degrees, and I think that's tremendously valuable. And then overlaying and incorporating technology and digital into all of those can only make those more accessible and more scalable for those organizations.
If you're looking for a technology partner to help you make your learning offerings more scalable and accessible, we encourage you to check out our sponsor for this quarter. WBT Systems develops the industry-leading top-class LMS, which delivers transformative professional development experiences for education and certification programs. With a single point of support from in-house integration experts, top-class LMS easily integrates with a wide variety of systems to provide efficient administration and a unified learning experience. WBT supports organizations in using learning technology to help drive growth in membership, increase revenues, and enhance the learning experience. WBT believes in truly understanding your challenges and partnering with you to ensure the success of your education programs. Find out more at leadinglearning.com/WBT. And now back to Jeff and Ian as they discuss the business models that work in the emerging lifelong learning landscape.
And you're starting to get at this some with what the comments you just made, but you know, obviously, if you know whether there's investment involved or not, you know, anybody who's going to be running an education company of some sort ultimately has to make money to, you know, to keep going and to grow. You know, what are you seeing work right now? What is potentially very interesting right now in terms of business models that are working in this market for education, particularly this market for, you know, lifelong learning, continuing education?
Yeah, you know, I think the business models here are still largely can still largely be the same, right? So it's not that you know, say taking a certification, you know, is necessarily different than it was, you know, 10 years ago. You're still seeking out, you know, learners. You're still seeking out stakeholders within a particular industry to take your certification. You're still wanting that certification to essentially be recognized and be meaningful, you know, within the community that you're serving. So I think what technology has been able to do is to really continue to amplify that, right? And so, you know, for a lot of associations right now, you know, certainly the certification exams and everything around that is a large revenue generator. And so the fees, the memberships, you know, that all generates revenue. Again, the one thing that we saw and that we believe in, you know, as we backed a company like BenchPrep is, you know, that there's opportunity to stand up, you know, new revenue lines around learning and preparation as well. Because again, one of the things that we've started to see, and you take CFA, which is a client of BenchPrep's as an example, You know, for certification, it's not always true that folks that actually even register for your certification end up completing, obviously. And so there's certainly leakage, you know, involved in that. And so how do you, you know, improve that? How do you improve the number of certifications and yield that you get out of that? And we think that learning and preparation is a big part of that. So not only does it, you know, enable organizations to create a new revenue line that and you can either charge for that or you can, you know, certainly bundle that in, you know, with the registration, but it actually improves the outcomes and yield, you know, for your learners as well. So, you know, to us, it feels like a win-win. And it also increases the access, just the ease of access and the scale of access. And so I think the business models that have been successful in many ways, you know, can still be the same as they were before, just amplified in a varied streams.
Mm. That makes a lot of sense. You know, and I'm sure we'll see some new models we're not thinking of emerge and take hold. I'm thinking of, you know, there was a lot of buzz around things like massive open online courses a while back that I think the business model never really quite clarified for those. But I think as the technology evolves, you know, we'll see new business models emerge. And of course, everything in this whole education learning market is evolving very quickly. I mean, there's a new buzzword all the time. It seems like I'm wondering, you know, for you, what are some key trends that you're tracking right now? And these may not be, you know, specifically in education or even in technology, for that matter. These may be, you know, higher level sort of trends, but that are going to impact education in one way or another. What are some areas that you're tracking right now and trying to foresee the impact that they're going to have?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. You know, for us, you know, we are tracking a number of key themes. So certainly I think at the highest levels, the sort of digital and technology adoption broadly, as we talked about, you know, in other sectors that percentage now is in the 20-30% as opposed to, you know, single digits for the education sector. So we believe there's an opportunity for, you know, really kind of 10x growth in digital penetration, you know, within education. And by the way, that means anything from content delivery to process automation as well. So, you know, we as an investor, we're not only looking at companies that are digitizing content. We're also looking at companies that are providing technology software solutions to institutions of learning. So that could be higher ed, that could be K-12. You know, we've also invested in a company called Degreed, you know, which some of your listeners may be familiar with, which is doing essentially skills tracking. And so that's a platform. You talk about new business models. You know, what they're doing is they've stood up a business around, you know, tracking the skills that any employee essentially has been gaining over the course of their career, right? So for any individuals today, the last time that you learned something certainly isn't when you had a university degree. It could absolutely be you went to a certain conference or you listened to you took a certain course online. You obviously, you know, had a certification, as it were. And so having those different types of skills tracked, you know, this is what Degreed is doing. And so that's an interesting business that, you know, I'd say 10 years ago couldn't really have existed in the same way that it does today, because you know, a lot of that may not be digitally tracked or even communicated in the same way, you know, in terms of profiles and skills learning and assessments. And so the digitization of learning, again, is some of a big theme that we're tracking. Another thing that we're tracking certainly is simulation learning. And by that, I mean, essentially, it's not just, you know, static content. It's not just PDFs. Certainly, it's not text. It's not even just videos. But it's actually interactive simulation training. And so we recently invested in a company called Labster, and this is more in the science domain, STEM education. And they're working together with a number of higher ed institutions, MIT among them, as an example. And they're providing essentially biology and chemistry lab simulation learning. And so high schools around the U.S., the Danish government recently sponsored for all Denmark students to be all Danish students to have a Labster account. And what they're doing is they're providing essentially simulation training around labs. And so you can imagine the high cost of creating a laboratory for experiments and students learning in a physical laboratory. If you can do some of that or all of that, frankly, you know, online and in a simulated fashion, you can think about it as a flight simulator. Instead of spending all the time in a jet fighter, you're also spending time in a flight simulator. You know, I see that happening not only in just, you know, labs for high school students and for university students, but frankly, in a number of other vocational areas as well. You can certainly imagine simulation training being used effectively. And again, increasing the access, increasing the scalable nature of the training and reducing the cost all at the same time. You know, I would say another one is certainly around AI. You know, a lot of our companies, and that's a, you know, obviously common buzzword that's out there right now. I would just say that a lot of our companies are incorporating AI into their products and into, again, the ability to glean and draw from all of the data that they're gathering along the in terms of the usage of their products, and then turning around and incorporating those insights to make the experience even better or adapted to individual learners. And I think that's just a consistent theme that we're seeing, you know, right now in the sector. And then certainly, I would say lastly is international. I mean, I think even for a lot of your listeners, you know, I suspect international is an interesting growth arc for them as well, right? So for the CFA as an example, certainly, you know, many CFA candidates are coming from India or coming from China, as well as the U.S. You know, really no reason why certain other certifications that carry weight in a given field of study or given field of practice, you know, shouldn't be able to pursue that. And we're seeing companies internationally that are also growing, you know, around education and technology as well, certainly.
Yeah, that's such a great area. In fact, I've, you know, come to the point where I tell pretty much any membership organization I work with, and this probably applies to just about any company too, that that you really need to be thinking of yourself as an international organization now, whether you have in the past or not, you know, because you're accessible from everywhere in the world,
right.
and you've probably got value. So that's great. And I like that you mentioned simulation based learning. I'm really looking forward to seeing how rapidly that evolves. I think it's already evolved a lot further than I think most people appreciate. And I like that you mentioned the lab company. I've worked with manufacturing organizations, you know, where they have like apprenticeship type programs, which are, I mean, they're really cumbersome and expensive to run because you have to have the machines and get the people to the machines. But, you know, if you can do that through simulation, which is increasingly possible, you suddenly open up access in just a major way. So I think that's just a fascinating area and looking forward to seeing how that evolves.
And I think just on that point, the simulation is going to not only just get better and better, but then you start to incorporate the potential use of a virtual reality as well, which again is one of those types of technologies. If you and this again goes back to my earlier comment, a lot of times technologies you know take a lot longer than folks would expect to get adopted, but then when they do, they really take off much faster than folks expect. I think VR falls into that category. I mean, certainly I would say, you know, even 5 years ago, it always felt like, hey, it could be right around the corner. You know, you had things, you know, companies obviously like Oculus out there as well. And so I think there is a lot of promise in VR. I'm not smart enough to know exactly when that's going to take off. But, you know, again, when you think about simulation training and the ability to incorporate and lean on VR technology, the manufacturing setting that you talked about certainly is entirely appropriate, right? If you can incorporate, you know, VR simulation training to get as close to reality as possible and allow people, frankly, to make mistakes in that simulated, you know, VR world without you know, creating a lot of physical real life damage, you know, that, you know, I think there's a lot of use cases for that, you know, that could transform a number of industries and frankly, you know, for associations and learning as well, be a big part of, you know, their businesses going forward at some point in time.
Definitely. I've been tracking a little bit of what Microsoft is doing in that area, and they seem to be really going all in on it, and really are already got some amazing things happening with their hollow glasses. I can't remember exactly what they call them, but it gives
right.
you that sort of
HoloLens, right? And they just released a new one. I think they have a big conference ongoing right now, even showcasing some of that technology. So it's pretty amazing stuff.
Definitely. Well, very interesting times, as everybody listening recognizes. As we're starting to wind up here, and thanks again for coming on and sharing your perspectives. And I think it's the first time we've had an investor on the show, so it's great to see how you see things. But I would like to turn to you personally, as we're getting ready to exit here, and want to ask you a question that we ask of all of our guests, and it's one that does focus on your personal learning, and that is, what is one of the most powerful learning experiences you've been involved in as an adult since finishing your formal education?
Yeah, I'd say that will be an easy one for me to answer, and I would say that it's my job. It's investing. This is a career path where, we are learning, and I am learning, every day. We're out there talking to companies every day. We're out there talking to, industry analysts. We're out there trying to understand, what's going on, in different subsegments of the market. What are the key trends? All the things that we've been talking about, these are things that we're studying every day. We're doing it because we want to pick the best companies to invest in. And we also want to be as knowledgeable and helpful as possible as we support our existing companies as well, right? I mean, the way that we invest, and much like a lot of venture investors, the way that we invest is, we like to invest where there's kind of post-product market fit. These companies have already built a product and they're delivering something the market wants. So that's interesting learning for us to continue to follow those trends. As we help these companies scale and, help them think about, how can we make their products even better? How can we make their offerings even stronger? And leverage, our capital to go do that. We really have to have a view on, where it can be helpful. Right. And so, learning about things like the simulation side, learning about things like, the benchmarking and data, and thinking about how that's incorporated into, the companies and the products that we're investing behind, that is constant learning, for us. And then also I would say that, from our executives and our CEOs, we are learning from them, all the time. This is a partnership. They are on the front lines having the customer conversations and distilling that in the board meetings, for us to really kind of digest. And it's fascinating because, again, across 28 portfolio companies, all of which are focused on education and education technology, we really have a unique position where we can see some of these trends evolving. We're starting to make international investments. And so learning about those markets, just in the last 8 months, we've invested in one company in China, one company in Europe, and one company in India. And seeing the trends that are happening in those geographies, how can they be now translated into opportunities for our companies here in the U.S.? And then vice versa, how can some of the things that our U.S. companies do, be sort of valuable to those international companies that we're investing in? So I would just say my job right now and for the last 15 years has been a constant education and it's always a fascinating day when I can continue to learn and bring back to our companies, what we're seeing in the market.
Well, I can definitely see and appreciate how that would be just a fascinating role to be playing. It's a very I'll use a term that got used in a recent podcast coined by a guest, Nancy Bacon. She talks about things being learningful. I think you've definitely got a very learningful job in what you do there at Owl Ventures. Well, just to wrap up then, if listeners want to learn more about Owl Ventures or connect with you, where should they go to do those things?
Our website is a good place to start, owlvc.com, and you can always feel free to reach me directly as well at ian@owlvc.com. We have also a LinkedIn page that you can follow and a number of other avenues, Twitter, et cetera. So all the usual stuff right now.
Well, great. And I'll clarify that it is owl is in the bird, O-W-L, for anybody who's listening and not seeing it in print, just to be clear about that. So yeah, definitely go check out Owl Ventures. Check out what Ian is doing there. And Ian, thanks so much for being a guest on Leading Learning.
Absolutely. Real pleasure. Thank you, Jeff.
That wraps up our interview with Ian Chu. To get show notes for this episode, go to leadinglearning.com/episode186.
When you check out the show notes, you'll also see various options for subscribing to the podcast. If you're getting value out of what you hear, we would be truly grateful if you would subscribe, as it helps us to get some data on the impact of what we're doing.
And as we noted at the very beginning of this episode, we'd also be grateful if you would take just a minute to give us a rating on iTunes. Go to leadinglearning.com/iTunes. To do that, Jeff and I personally appreciate your rating and review, but more importantly, reviews and ratings play an important role in helping the podcast show up when people search for content on learning and leading.
And we'd be grateful if you'd check out our sponsors for this quarter. Find out about community brands at leadinglearning.com/community brands and find out what WBT Systems has to offer at leadinglearning.com/WBT.
Finally, please tell others about the podcast. You can send a tweet by going to leadinglearning.com/share. You can also like us on Facebook and share us there at facebook.com/leadinglifelonglearning. However you do it, please spread the good word about Leading Learning.
Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.